Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, April 30th at 1:30.
Good afternoon, commissioners. There is a board time schedule. I took the liberty of adjusting it. I thought it appropriate to bring Mark Wilson in here for just a moment. As you know, we've had some exciting times with the Washington County's risk pool in the last month or so, month and a half, and I think we've concluded our business with them, and so Mark will bring you up to speed on what action they took and where we are from a coverage point of view.
And, of course, our attorney will kick in any time if I'm getting sideways on this. But we, as of 12:01 midnight, you know, Tuesday, from Monday to Tuesday, we are now self-insured. So we are out of the pool from Tuesday forward, effectively. All of the claims that we had previously with the pool remain there, and they'll just be eventually closed out and worked through that process. Any losses that the date of loss is from Monday back, however, during our policy periods, we have 12 policy periods, anywhere back from there, those are covered under the policy pool, the pool's policy. And so anything from Tuesday forward is covered under our new coverage.
Okay.
We have there's some beneficial things about the new coverage, I think. From what I can tell, we get to use our prosecuting attorney's office more often, saving us having double attorneys on some of these things. Had a good meeting yesterday with Chris's team. And just got all the instructions here just minutes ago on our processes with them. We are saving, instead of a $618,000 bill, it'll be approximately $343,000. So we're saving $275 a year.
Wow.
Of that, some of the functions, we are going to have to pick up some additional functions that the pool was doing for us. So I just want to let you gentlemen know that I am going to put in for a person to pick up those things that the pool was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll still yield.
Well, still, you
$150,000 in savings or so.
At least. Yeah. We're going to be running dual systems for a few years because we have to track their claims and we have to track CV Star. Star is the name of the insurance company that we're going through.
S-T-A-R.
There's two R's on it.
Okay.
And so we'll be picking up our own tort claims, loss control, the risk training, tracking losses, the admin piece, and then transitioning also our property policy. We persuaded them to not kick us from the property policy, so we're going to finish up this policy year through the end of September. During that time, we're doing a relook at all of our properties, which we discovered today we're missing a few already, to get everything listed under our standalone program through our broker also. The cost may be close to the same there, but because we don't pay very much overhead. It might be like $30,000 difference, but we'll still save money.
So are we going to pursue refund of premium for the period from when we were kicked out to the end of the policy?
That was my question.
We are.
I figured you might be going to.
We are, but they're gonna have to talk to the full board, which is in end of July. My gut tells me, and Chris can correct me, but that they have spent $160,000 into the defense of the two-prong cases that they have with us involved. They spent about $160,000. I suspect that they're sitting right now sort of on our refund, if you will, against what we owe them, so to speak, what they may think we owe them for the defense of those cases. So, but we will know.
Technically, we don't owe them anything for them.
Because our cure said we would reimburse them for their legal costs, but since they rejected our cure,
we're
no longer bound by that.
Yeah, we have no existing agreement regarding our payment of their lawyer's fees. Now, there is the existing policy that they've terminated has provisions for breach of contract. The question, all of this is a little premature because there hasn't been a determination by anybody whether we breached or whether they have breached or whether or not the assignment is a breach. Those are all issues that await to be resolved. And some of this really we should discuss in executive session. So, because the litigation that will be involved between the county in the risk pool or any potential additional litigation that may be required, what we can talk about later. But for today's purposes, I would say that they were pretty cold on the idea. In fact, I think they laughed when we brought up the issue of a refund. But they said, in fairness, because this issue has not been addressed before, and because of the fact they did not have a 75% vote at that time, they were going to have to bring it up in front of the full panel in their summer session, and we'll hear something more at that time. So
yes.
I think it's a legitimate issue whether they agree or not. That's an issue that's ripe for the county to pursue in the event that becomes necessary once this litigation between Northrop and Davis and the risk pool unfolds.
In other words, there's nothing in there that would allow them at this point to legally withhold the refund of the remaining premium that we paid, but they may differ with that view.
Yeah, they'll treat it as an offset. They're going to say that you breached the agreement by assigning this claim. The agreement prohibits assignments. We're paying costs out to defend that, so we're not going to pay twice. You may have a refund, you may not, but we're going to wait till the litigation resolves itself before we tell you whether you do. That's a very
likely scenario.
Response they may give you, but they haven't given us a direct answer.
And we're expecting that it would take about a year or so for them to settle that?
It should be. We should know, because this is a declaratory judgment action. Most of this will be issues of law. There will be some factual issues, but I would believe that the majority of this will be issues that will be decided by the court.
Which would be sooner.
Will occur sooner than later.
Yeah. And we probably have to study the termination clauses, too, with them terminating us, and us not terminating them. They take on some responsibility with that termination choice.
That's true. In fact, if it turns out that the county did not, if the assignment clause is unenforceable, if a court says this is against public policy and therefore unenforceable, we didn't violate anything by assigning that that claim, and by terminating us, they breached the agreement, and it may well be that the county has a claim against the pool. But again, we won't know any of this until we get further. I mean, this is going to be kind of a chess game that each of the moves will affect other moves in the future, and we won't know until we have some more background.
So basically, we've become self-insured, and it's a process of saving money. Is there a downside to it? Are deductibles higher?
It is what they call a retention. A deductible is actually part of a policy. Retention means it stands alone underneath the policy. So what we have is we have a $1 million retention. We have a $10 million, what they call excess policy above that. And then we have $15 million excess policy above that. So that's the same coverage we had at the pool. It's $25 million. The only difference really is that that also is our aggregate, an annual aggregate. Right now there isn't an aggregate for the pool, but I can tell you that the broker of record for the pool and their underwriters are probably going to write an aggregate for the pool this next policy year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that means that the sum of all your claims in a given policy year cannot exceed the 25.
Correct. Yeah.
So if you have a 10 and an 8 and a 9,
yeah, well, you're done for
you've
the year.
Exceeded, yeah. You've exceeded
yeah.
the count.
Yeah, throughout the history
from
of
the
pool,
yeah.
We've never approached that limit at all.
Well, from the very beginning of the county in its inception, we have only had one, what I will call a large claim, and that was the Fogel case, which was a road design, and we settled for $2 million. Largest case we've ever had. And the rest of the cases don't even come close to that. I think we had a $600,000 case or in that $400,000 case, like Tabitha. I know we had a death at the jail, but those are all modern instances. And even those, even with our defense costs, still would not have hit the $1 million threshold. So I think we're actually in pretty good shape, frankly. I'm going to get an actuarial report and find out what kind of reserve they'd like us to have, so I can work with budget and those folks and the actuary and our auditor's office to just for information purposes.
And then the savings that we accrue
should be put into that reserve.
Hopefully we'll help build our reserve back up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, good work, Mark. It sounds like we have better coverage,
you know, it's
and lower costs.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes these things are just, you know, it's just simply fortuitous sometimes the way these things come out, because one of the things that come out of this is we have, by virtue that these are excess policies, get an automatic extension onto our workers' comp excess policy, which I did not know until today. So we have a $1 million excess policy on our workers' comp with a $750,000 deductible. If we, for some reason, had, let's say we had several deaths from one instance, our $10 million excess policy extends off of that. So that's new. That's very new. That was not in the pool. The usual exclusions, they're the typical ones, war, pollution, because we already have a pollution coverage, that covers that, asbestos, those kinds of things. Those are pretty common.
Great.
And quite frankly, I didn't find anything, and public records acts are excluded. I didn't find anything after reading this that is not in the policy with the pool. This coverage is just as good as the policy with the pool. So I was a little surprised when I read that. So
okay.
I was pretty pleased.
I think we understand that we have to have that reserve in addition to our normal reserve.
I don't know that yet.
Okay.
I want to say yes, but what that looks like, I cannot tell you until, because right now we're considered self-insured under the state insurance, under the risk manager.
Mark, wasn't there another county that just left and went self-insured?
Kitsap.
Maybe we could look to them and see what they did for a reserve or something. I don't know if you get an idea. But it just popped in my head that there was one that recently did it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to ask them. And I was gonna call the state risk manager anyway when we were done here, but haven't had time to research that. So
we had a phrase we tagged Mark with. I don't know if he wants to share that with the board or not. But
what's that?
Which one?
I don't know if he wants to. I don't think he wants to share the phrase I tagged
him
with.
Well, okay, maybe not. Sometimes maybe when not. You're walking through a field and you step in cow dung and you come out smelling like a rose. So that's all I have to say.
Well, that didn't happen by accident. Thank you very much for the diligent work in covering the bases. As a risk manager, you have covered the risk, so thank you.
Thanks,
well
sir.
Done.
It was good to force ourselves to look beyond what we thought was getting a good deal. So.
Yeah, we did. Serendipitous, I guess, would be the right term. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm glad you didn't say walk into the park.
Yeah. Walked into one of Bill Bjerke's parks and stepped on something. Yeah. I'll be in my office when I come in after.
Okay, next item on the agenda, if you recall, a couple weeks ago, we had a rather spirited discussion about the Parks Advisory Commission. That
really good communication afterwards.
Exactly right. So time to revisit this so that we all have a common understanding of what we're doing. And
yeah. How and why. I made the five copies that are all together, so I don't have to go on the table here. So essentially, it started off with this news release, and prior to that, we've gotten the clear direction on that to move forward with asking folks that were currently on the board to come on back. And so sorry about any miscommunications that were on that regard. So so since then, of course, we've asked all the members, and four or five accepted originally, and Commissioner Mordor, thank you for coming out last week. That was a great meeting, and staff.
Yeah, you got a great staff out there.
I sure do. But so they had accepted, and since last Monday, we called them about three times now to see if they could update their credentials, you know, their letter of interest, mm-hmm. as well as a resume. Mm-hmm. And we've heard from two of the four.
Okay.
And so, now, through multiple attempts, we just can't get a hold of Kelly Cretton. And I think he's off in some
other country.
He travels extensively, South America, I think. Mm-hmm.
And then Marcia Keene, we can't get a hold of her either. So
I think they're on vacation.
What's that?
I think they're on vacation.
She's on vacation.
She was one of the two that was bugging me. I want to be on it. I want to be on it with you. So if I could run her down through her husband. I'll share that for them to get a hold of you.
Well, from last week's meeting, kind of concluded that we'd take a look at all the members, the incumbents, as well as the new coming members. And so with since our meeting last week, we had one person of interest that actually dropped off the list. And she said that she just did not have time after all. So that's Gail Bronner, and you won't see her on this list anymore. So what we did, and some of these documents we just kind of put together, and the interest that we had of trying to put the track together so quickly was because of comprehensive parks plan, which the second page is the actual schedule that we're kind of aiming for, so we can complete it by the end of this year. But that's that we're actually going to push that off just a little ways. So instead of having our first meeting on in May 9th, I believe, we're going to push it off towards the later part of May.
Okay.
So just to make sure that we got the PRAC board members on board and ready to go. So,
okay. So I signed an agreement between you and community planning. To they're going to help you with the comp plan update.
Page 3 is the Parks Advisory Board. Basically the ordinance that allows us to operate Chapter 2.6.1. Now, this might be a question for Chris here. What you're looking at is the ordinance that precedes Vancouver Clark Parks, where we actually changed up the Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission to 5 and 5. This one states that we need 7. This is strictly a Clark County ordinance. So I think that's basically what we were going off of. So
this existed before we combined with
correct.
City Parks?
Yes, it did. And since we dissolved that relationship with them, I'm assuming that we would default back to the original ordinance.
So 1979.
Yes.
So, Chris, is that an accurate assumption that if we dissolve
the ordinance should have been amended when we joined, or when we created the joint panel with the city. I'm looking at it right now.
I'm pretty sure it was.
This is 050. You think it was modified? Well, if so, I mean, that makes sense. But if it was, you would have thought they would have codified that difference. It's okay. I mean, that I would tell you that unless the board changes something, that you're talking about 2.61.050. Yeah, it does speak to 7 members who are appointed by the board to serve without compensation. The board can change that if they conclude that 7 members are not needed. There's nothing in your grant funding that requires the advisory commission to be of any particular size from my review of contracts.
It was my understanding with the ordinance that we have, with the persist 7, we kind of stick with 7 as far as voting.
Okay. So I mean, certainly there's nothing that prohibits that. And assuming the board's okay with that, then that's probably the simplest thing to do.
Yeah.
We were hoping to actually change the ordinance a bit to make it a little more friendly for us, because what we wanted to do originally was bring it down to 5 voting members, and then of course we've got our members that are represented from the school districts, and so that could be potentially 4 or 5 more folks, and then we've got the Parks Foundation member, so we still end up with about potentially 10 or 11 members on board there. So. And then, of course, the monthly meetings, we want to make sure that we...
Once a quarter? I
want to get down to once a quarter, if at all possible. Don't think it's going to happen this year, largely because of the comprehensive planning. Yeah. We're going to be involved with them quite a bit.
Yeah, and the 6-year term's kind of lengthy.
It is. And
stagger some of those terms?
Or just shorten it to 3 or 4.
So, basically, this is the ordinance as back in 1979, and this serves as a starting point, and you'd like to be able to modify this so it becomes more applicable and current the way you want it now. So, sure, that sounds like a good idea.
But to make changes to this, we have to have public hearings and all that.
You have to have a public hearing and give notice, because it's an amendment to a codified ordinance. So it will not have to go to the Planning Commission. This is not a development-type regulation, but it does require a public hearing. So it's not difficult, and certainly you want to do this because state law requires us to advise the public when public hearing or when the regular meetings will be, and this says hold regular meetings at least monthly. So if you want to go to a quarterly meeting, we will need to amend it. It's just we can do it, and you're right, it will not be very cumbersome for the board, for the parties.
Yeah. Okay, now is that in your timeline?
No, actually, we actually drafted up a revision to this, mm-hmm. and that was ready to go. Mm-hmm. However, you know, with the comprehensive plan, we just decided to table this until next year, and then that when the comp plan is taken care of, and we'll definitely revisit it. And so, because we heard that it's going to take potentially about 2 months to get this ordinance changed, you know, with everything that was invested.
In other words, that's live within it for now?
What's that?
Just simply adopt this or just simply go with this
just
for
comply
now?
Comply with this until,
yes.
until we can change it.
Our PA is frowning.
Well, I think you're going to be looking at 3 weeks anyhow, but we could probably do an amendment if the board's agreeable. We could, you and our office could write this, and we could get this out to public notice and get it before the board inside of a month if the stars were right.
Mm-hmm. Well, more recently, we realized that, you know, the Comprehensive Parks Plan, you know, the reason we do that is to receive grant funding. Mm-hmm. Well, next year's kind of a bye year for grant funding. We can't even apply for grants until the following year. And so the pressure is really...
We can't because of why?
You apply for grants every 2 years.
Oh, okay. So there's nothing available.
There's nothing available.
So there's nothing pressing.
Correct. So if we didn't finish up the comprehensive plan this year, we wouldn't be hurt by that.
Okay.
We can pursue that if we want to.
How often do we do we update the comp plan for the
parks? Every 6 years.
Okay, so would it make sense for us to tie that timing with the
Oliver's
comprehensive plan for the county?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
well, that sounds good. So we've got time.
He wants information as soon as he can from the comp mm-hmm. plan because mm-hmm. he's working on the growth plan. Mm-hmm. And so that's essentially our comp plan is a chapter within
yeah.
the growth plan. So.
And I assume also that the comprehensive plan is something that really is that the board has a vision that we'll have a part in that in an adoption process, and that the resources of those individuals that want to be able to sign up and do a lot of the homework, we're thankful for them to be able to do it, but they're not going to be the ones just simply saying, here it is, you know, it's our vision, and they think, oh, wait a minute, what vision is that? That we make sure, because this is our own parks now,
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely.
We don't have the... the center on 136th Avenue.
Yeah, we don't have the
recreational
facilities.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Yeah,
First
Burke Center. We don't have those kinds of things. We're
exactly.
a very different beast mm-hmm. than what we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that the vision looking forward is appropriate for unincorporated Clark County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the closest we have to a true recreation facility is Luke Jensen.
Still sports park. Yeah.
Yeah. So we want to make sure we end up with a direction that makes sense for us, because mm-hmm. otherwise we're going to inherit what is appropriate for Vancouver, but they're not us.
Yeah, and we had, you know, we worked through just the staff and a small group worked through some potential revisions to this, which tried to reflect that, you know, getting away from, you know, the Parks Recreation and Advisory Board and get to a Clark County Parks Board of some kind.
Yes.
And to really define the separation and kind of what we would want to see out of a board itself.
Yes, and I see this is the Parks Advisory Board, and even the terminology, you know, the habit is for us to keep referring to it as PRAC.
Right, right. We're trying to pass that. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So it's really Clark County Parks Advisory Board.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah. What about board versus commission? Is it just terminology? There's no board, commission. There's another one.
Council,
you know, whatever. Make any difference what those terminologies?
Well, county council is typically a term that's more frequently associated with legislative bodies that are under a charter form of government. But the difference between commission and board is not typically have a difference. I mean, some chapters of the RCWs will define these terms, in which case you go by the definition in the RCW. But generally, when you're talking about legislative bodies, board of commissioners or the board is typically the same entity.
Okay.
He's talking about advisory boards.
Advisory
boards and commissions.
Yeah, this is an advisory.
I don't think it matters what you call it.
Because
it's more what their function is.
If we go by this, then it's the Park Advisory Board. It's not a commission. It's not recreation.
Right.
So Clark County Park Advisory Board, I would think, right? Good. Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
So did we decide to revise the ordinance?
Well, we will do it. It's just as soon as the board wants us to help get it done, we'll work with Bill to make those changes, and we'll get it before you.
Move forward.
Okay.
Low priority.
Sure.
Okay.
Anything
else
is important first.
Yeah. Setback,
okay. Well, we can do that. Sure.
That would be great.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't you give me a list of, just give me a subject list by email of the changes you'd like to make. I'll draft proposed, because putting it in statutory, put it in a format for statutory construction takes a little bit longer, but since this hasn't been amended in a long time, it should go pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah.
You just tell me the changes you want to make and we'll get it done.
Yeah. And I think we probably have a file we can just send them with those changes in it.
Right? Yeah.
And this basically defines a pretty limited scope as to what this board would do. For instance, this board just only serves as a resource for the commissioners. But in reality, they're a big help to the staff, too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So we should probably
Absolutely.
Build that in.
Oh, yeah. This will have more meat on it,
yeah.
I'm sure.
And one thing, too, depending on the timing of the board, we did talk about a little bit if we assembled the Parks Advisory Board prior to finalizing the changes, they could provide a little bit of input and feedback on those actual changes. I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but we might want to go in with the plan. And
those I've talked to are anxious to be a part of it.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. Yeah.
The formation of the, or actually the appointment process with all the boards and all the advisory boards, they're all pretty much standardized now.
Mm-hmm.
That all the candidates, regardless of their incumbents, whatever, they all put forth their blurb that tells about them,
mm-hmm.
and they all are. They Jennifer passes them to the commissioners. Mm-hmm. We all each look at them and we pick those we want to interview, and then we end up choosing those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And also because this board would be so helpful to the staff, I would think that you would want to be included in that
mm-hmm.
process and indicate the
mm-hmm.
ones that you'd be interested to interview and recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Great.
You bet. Sounds great.
So I think that's our next step, right? So we'll need to, we have all that information, and I think, have we provided that to the board?
Yeah, you need to get with Jennifer so she can do her normal process.
So this is basically it right here.
This is it. Okay. This entire packet. So
can you also email it to us?
Mm-hmm.
The electronic version?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I've kind of clearly depicted who's the current incumbents and who's actually sent us their current information. So the good ones.
Great.
And then, of course, then there's all the other candidates. Somewhat in order of our preference, and based on the fact that they've got some background experience, and
mm-hmm.
so and I think they can really help us plan. So we kind of doing it up to the folks that want to be on it because they like parks, you know, away from the folks that really want to do something for parks. And so that's kind of what we're looking for.
So when the recommendations come from you to the board, are you going to rank order them?
I think we
because
would.
Right now the ordinance says 7 members, and
mm-hmm.
you just mentioned dropping it to 5.
Mm-hmm.
5 yes. voting, I think, is what.
Five voting,
right?
5 from the county, and then school districts and whatever else.
But will those be non-voting members? I mean, that's the take I got.
5 voting members, and the rest will be non-voting
right.
members.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Since last Monday when we met, we had Bud Van Cleave as one of our choices, and kind of changed our mind on that. I will make him an honorary member, you know, because of his health. I mean, he is
mm-hmm.
totally all about parks. And
mm-hmm.
but, I just don't feel like he's going to be making too many meetings. And so we'll definitely make him an honorary member. And we'll
Who's that?
Bud Van Cleave.
Is he on here?
He's actually on the second page. In the county, volunteering for various things.
We
always to be a part
He's significant and appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually named the conference center out at Luke Jensen is named for him.
Oh,
yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a nice touch.
And that's where we're holding our prep meeting, so that should go well.
Okay, so if they come in rank ordered, then the board can say, here's the first 5,
mm-hmm.
and maybe here are 2 extras.
Yes.
Yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
just in case.
Okay.
All right.
The one thing it's not in here, we created it, but it was the mission statement, and got here, Commissioner Gore, and so we had
mm-hmm.
that mission statement, and we had another one that we
That was a starting point, so you guys
so,
feel free.
So my apologies for not, here it is, it's on the back of the second page here, so of the potential candidates.
What were we looking at?
The mission statement.
What page?
are for the candidates are?
The new candidates.
The new candidates.
The new candidates.
There's a guy who knows how to navigate.
Right there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So some more food for thought. And is this the mission statement, is that something that we would ultimately let decide on the mission statement, or is that something that we would
It's a draft, a starting point,
mm-hmm.
something that you and the commission can put together.
Yeah, let's...
So something...
Rather than try to work out the details here, let's... spend some time brainstorming.
Okay.
To refine. We standardized on some of the language. For instance, it calls it a commission, and I guess we're going to call it a park and a few basic things like that.
PAB. Yeah, we may want to think about what kind of acronym we come up with.
Yeah, it has to be something.
Yeah,
you got to be able to say the culprit.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, guys.
I think a few people might have been surprised in the past. We don't want to be surprised, too.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are doing so terrific on the park. Really.
Thank
really
you.
Good.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's a really, really good room.
Yeah.
Wow. Long we're fully taking it. I'm a little concerned with people having contact in Vancouver and Vancouver not following through with passing information on.
Oh, you mean as far as work or just the transition?
Someone's contacted. A little bit concerned there.
Yeah.
They don't drag their feet.
Have we heard that?
No, I haven't.
You getting what you need? Just,
yeah, so far the communication's been pretty good. I mean, we have pretty good relationships on the staff level. So, far, so good.
Okay.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Now,
we
so
have
you're,
dates.
You're done for the week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Be here a little bit longer.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All good.
I've got some other stuff I'll send you.
Okay. On the agenda is Commissioner Candidate
things.
Interview Process.
What's this? Oh, this is your proposed schedule?
Right, so what we were...
I'm going to be gone May 7 through 11, but there's nothing you need me for on this, right?
So this is kind of... Rebecca and I plugged some dates into what Commissioner Madore kind of gave us as it related to the last thing we looked at in terms of a time frame. And so, mm-hmm. you know, what we're trying to do is obviously move this forward, but within, we have no quorum for the week after May 14th, so what we wanted to do is try to get these things done before then, and that's why we proposed May 14th.
What's May 14th?
Well, that would be the end date for the interview and the... You know,
selection
date.
One of us, you'll be gone.
No.
Well, what do you mean you don't have quorum?
Well, the week after the 14th,
who's
I
gone?
Think we're gone. That somebody's gone that week because we didn't have a quorum for that Tuesday.
I'll go.
One of you is gone the following week in May. So we tried to get everything scheduled, or at least get some hypothetical dates on here prior to May 14th.
So May 14 is a Wednesday.
Yep. So we
and you're thinking
so the 21st.
Yeah. So and you guys asked about questions, survey questions. I put some in the back of the packet. The last two pages are actual kind of questions that Kitsap County had used in the past, as well as Walla Walla County. So those two give you ideas. It sounded like Commissioner Madore, you already had some survey questions maybe that you were thinking about.
I do.
And I put your notes on the second page for kind of your notes related to your timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So we can discuss those. But anyhow, that's kind of what we were hoping maybe if we were going to do some questions, do them by the end of this week, give the candidates, you know, time to respond, a week to respond, post those, also inform the candidates that we are going to schedule interviews for a date certain. In here, we proposed May 14th, which would be a Wednesday afternoon. Now, there's some questions that it looks like Rebecca wrote down here. Do we want to talk to CBTV about, you know, when we do determine the date, having them
involved? Yeah, I would think that'd be good.
Very cool.
And basically, the way it's scheduled now would be for that Wednesday afternoon, one-hour interviews, half-hour executive session, and then an appointment.
Normally, so that would be, that we'd normally have board time. At that time. So this replaces board time?
I think our plan was that this would replace board time that day, that Wednesday afternoon.
So This is what we're going to target, try to target?
Because we're canceling.
Check our calendars.
We've canceled board time at May 7. If we cancel board time May 14, then we'd have 3 weeks between board times.
Today's the 30th, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're having fun, ooh, man, I'll tell you.
Why don't I get Rebecca in here to see if there's a Tuesday or a Thursday? Maybe the 15th works as well as the 14th.
We have a, well, there's the Elder Justice Board meeting on the 15th.
Yep, what time?
It's at 3.
You can go back and compare this with my calendar, and you can compare it with yours, and we could get a hold of Linnea or Rebecca.
Yeah. So basically, I think the idea here is that the staff would set the dates, and we just have to make sure that the dates
jive with
work
your schedules
for each of us.
They've
so we don't
sure
have to
there.
Nail down the dates right now. Staff can nail down the dates.
Yeah,
all we
can,
need
we
is open opportunities for us to be able to make sure that the candidates are available. And we're available.
Okay, cool.
Well, they can't do that until we tell them if we're available.
Well, they got our calendars.
Well, look, Linnea's got access to your calendars, and we all do, so we can we can do some bouncing against your calendars. But
May 2nd is in 2 days. I haven't started any questions at all to give to the candidate.
Well, I'll put some questions in there.
Well, it's important. See, I have very specific questions that I've written, and I think it's important that Tom has the opportunity too.
Maybe I won't won't submit written ones. We've always just asked them orally before.
Well, we're going to do both. Commissioner Orr suggested written first, followed up by a public interview process.
Right.
So you could always decline to ask written questions if you.
Well, I'll try to put something together. I've got just a couple days this week.
Well, that's just, we're just trying to get that out. So
that's the starting
idea
point, so.
Would be that we would settle on these dates today, hopefully, or tomorrow, and then we would send each of the candidates a letter identifying the dates and what.
I would say certainly all effective efficiency, we want to be able to go forward, but if we haven't already contacted the candidates to know that the dates work for them, that's the coordination process needs to be able to happen. So the idea is, this looks like a good format, and staff can coordinate with the candidates, with CVTV, and with us to make sure that it works, and we've got a green light, and whatever that turns out to be, if it's a, then we will have made. We don't have to end up changing something because we didn't check with one of the parties.
Okay, so the next time you see this, it'll have date certain.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's fully coordinated.
Yeah, I'm good.
Provided, Commissioner Mielke, we by Friday close business, we have your questions.
Yep.
If any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also between the time that we give them the questions, the time that they want it, that they answer, we want to make sure that they ask them, do you need one day? Do you need 2 days? What do you need?
Nail it.
No, I assume that they'll pick up the questions in person and they'll deliver them in person. I expect.
Or
if they want
or they may
if
like
they want
email.
Speed it along.
They may like email.
Yeah, that's fine.
That would work.
Okay. So I'll communicate with candidates to find out that a proposed date works or not, and we'll settle your calendar and their calendar. I imagine that we should, though, have some formal correspondence, a letter that goes to each of them from the two of you inviting them to the interviews on the date we pick. So I'll have to prepare that as well this week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So we got time for that, I think.
Yep.
All right.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Good.
That gives us something to shoot for now.
Yep.
That's good.
What's next?
Okay, Commissioner reports.
Oh. I'm good.
Oh, no, we've got...
What?
Don't we have the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
We've got Jeff.
Is Jeff out there?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just wanted to get it.
Skipped over the massage parlor deal.
Right, thanks for waiting.
So we want to talk to Jeff about pretending a massage parlor?
Hi.
He's got a navigational tool to help you find it.
Right. So you guys will remember a while back, some folks from our neighborhood associations came in. They were concerned about the transitional nature of the massage parlors that are kind of coming into the county and leaving, and you know maybe how. well, just how transitional they can be and how there's maybe not enough in our code to protect folks against that. And so we started working from that with the planning department and Jeff Knighton and Oliver Schopp on kind of looking at our code and maybe what we could do to strengthen it to protect ourselves from that situation. Since there's been more newspaper stories, there's been a couple of incidents where Vancouver police have gone and looked at a couple of these places and taken some enforcement action, which is great. But Jeff's here because he's kind of worked through the process with some of our some of the massage parlors in Clark County that are operating completely legitimately to make sure that whatever we're doing in terms of our code to try to protect ourselves is not going to adversely impact them or their legitimate business, and also working with our departments, the health department and Marty's shop, to talk about what changes to the code we might make, how it will impact their workload and the time their staff would spend kind of implementing some of it. So we think we're to a spot where we've got some a few changes recommended. We wanted to touch base with the board to kind of find out where you want us to go in terms of, do you want a work session or for us to take the changes straight to Planning Commission? And I'll turn it over to Jeff to just to kind of talk about kind of the main change or the main changes that we've got in our code.
Sure. We started work on this probably early February, and we've gone through several iterations. We've talked to, as Axel mentioned, Public Health, who was my original idea of who to work through to maybe issue a license. Turned out that wouldn't have worked out so well, but we did find the way that is most likely to cause the least stress on legitimate business is for a certificate of occupancy to be issued through community development at the time of, businesses would need to show their license that's issued by the state of Washington, by the Department of Health, to the Community Development Department to receive their certificate of occupancy and open. Legitimate businesses will have that for each of the individuals employed there. Illegitimate businesses won't. And that's kind of the idea that we came up with in order to implement this. I have talked to several massage parlors in Hazeldell and Salmon Creek. And the only school I found for massage in order to get their license, I also talked to, and that's in the city of Vancouver, but I did want to get their input, dropped off copies of the draft ordinance.
The school is in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's within the city. It's on 136th, just north of Milton.
So Vancouver issues business permits for all businesses, right?
Yeah, cities get to issue business licenses, which is a, one added, extra added layer where, something they have that we don't.
So we require an occupancy permit?
That's correct.
Under the building code.
For businesses.
Every structure in the county, after it gets a final inspection, is given an occupancy for that type of use, whether it be residential, commercial, or industrial.
Is that part, the charges, as part of the charge of a building permit?
Correct.
What about if you're just occupying an existing building? Do we have an occupancy permit fee we must have?
No. Well, if it's a new tenant, but it's exactly the same use, insurance company A versus insurance company B, there wouldn't be a new occupancy. The permit that would be posted, they usually post them on,
it's for the site.
It's for the building. And it's for the use of the building and a use of that building for a particular purpose. And so the occupancy permit, which in some cases is put on the electric box, is it will say what it is, whether it's R4 or whether it's C1 or whatever the particular use is. Mm-hmm. And then if you change occupancies, it does require a building permit. The building code does that, and then they look at the change in the use, what the hazard is that's associated with it, whether it requires new sprinkler requirements or new structural requirements based on that, and then you get a new occupancy.
If we're existing businesses, are they grandfathered in, or is this...
Existing businesses, the code does allow for a grandfather of existing businesses as long as there's that difference, as long as the noncompliance doesn't result in a life safety issue. if there's any requirement or any concern that it that the deviation would impact public safety, then they're required to comply with the new code.
Okay. Well, the moratorium, I think the terminology that we used was adult entertainment.
Mm. That's right. Yeah, that's different subject.
Different subject.
That's different.
Different
yeah.
subject.
Yep. That's
so
also
that's still a pending thing. Oh,
related,
but
still working.
Would be,
so this
would
is new.
Yes. Well, it's an issue that came to you some months ago, actually,
yeah.
by a number of neighbors who had issues.
Oh, okay.
Actually, was it in the city?
It was. There was a business at 39th and right where you would get on the 5 freeway going south. There's a little office complex right there in the neighborhood, and there was a group of neighbors that were concerned about it, and Vancouver PD handled that. But it was came to the forefront in the newspaper article, I believe, in the middle of January. And then there was a lady that was concerned, a couple of neighbors that were concerned, that brought the issue to the city of Vancouver and also to us. And
they testified at a hearing, didn't they?
They did.
And I believe that business that closed down, at least allegedly at one time, opened right back up. Not far away.
Right.
And that's part of the issue.
Right.
You know, that's what's kind of happening with these places.
Right. And the lady that was concerned had written to some state legislators, and the legislators had referred her back to the local municipalities to handle that. And we looked into ways that we could regulate those types of uses here.
So do we have an ordinance already that applies to this?
We do not, and that was one of the concerns, not specifically to massage practitioners. There's some vague language in Title V of the code that refers to adult entertainment businesses, but it didn't specifically call out massage practitioners, which is what we were focused on here.
And Jeff, are we still looking at a version of the code that has a pretty healthy section for exemptions?
Absolutely.
Like, and I think that's important because we wanted to try and find the best way to get at people who are, you know, trying to do harm to the community and don't have the best intentions in mind. We didn't want to harm people who are legitimate business owners. And
right.
so not only, you know, we tried to find, okay, anybody who's legitimate should be licensed by the state, and showing us a copy of their license and the people who works for them's license shouldn't be that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. There's also an exemption section. So when you are a licensed practitioner for massage and you're associated with an athletic or health club or you're associated with...
And I have copies here that I can...
So we wrote in, there's a number of exemptions for kind of folks who are going to be associated or affiliated with other places, a healthcare facility.
Chiropractic, or
you're at a hospital and you're a massage therapist. Just that kind of thing, you would be exempt from the extra process. But
okay.
So we try to do as good a job as we can.
So if we were to go there, we would expect to see a state license, masseuse
mm-hmm.
license.
And not just for the business itself, but for each individual.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the certificate of occupancy would be for an individual business of massage.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we think that would consider? Would they come here to get it? How is that going to keep them legitimate? So
well, we had quite a talk about this, is my recollection, because the point that you guys were just talking about is there sometimes, because we don't always issue a business license like a city does, so is there going to be some occasion or sometimes when you just have one business move out and one move in and there's not any contact with the county? I don't think that's going to happen very often, because at a minimum, even when a new tenant moves in, the fire marshal still has to get involved. Someone has to come there and issue that certificate of occupancy, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, it really depends. Now, I will tell you, as a practical matter, I mean, we're talking about legal issues, and a way apart from legal issues are the practical realities. And practically speaking, almost every business that moves into a new site wants to make changes. And you change walls, you change outlets, you change facilities just because you want it to look nice. Whenever those things happen, we would get they would come in contact with the county. So while they're not required to, they could use the old facilities that are there from the prior tenant. as a practical matter, they typically do upgrade. And when that happens, we are involved. We do do inspections, and we would issue a new certificate of occupancy. So,
But I guess if someone were to slip through, and then there was a complaint and the sheriff went there,
exactly.
At least the sheriff could go to our local code and say, but you are supposed to have these licenses on the wall where I can see them, and you don't. So, you know, if there was the occasion for somebody to get through the crack, mm-hmm. so to say, the sheriff would at least have a tool in the code to say, you're required to have these on file.
So would they be able to get this permit online?
Good question. The county has been working on trying to go to an online permitting system,
yeah.
but right now I don't believe that's in place.
So what's going to my mind is keeping the cost of the permit down, because
sure.
our goal is to make sure that they register, we know who's there,
yeah.
and that they know what the requirements are. So
mm-hmm.
To keep that down, it'd be the cost of issuance here. What do you think that would be?
Oh, it'd be cheap. There's not a lot of labor involved in just looking at the licenses of the employees and of the business itself. Very quick process.
Get it here in the health department.
We would come here. We talked with the health department, and it was more practical to have it come through.
So if they come here, we have a $94 minimum charge or additional charge on our permits. We smeared it in with our normal cost of the permit to pay for the guy coming in to kick the tires. But we added it to all permits.
Well, we can take a look at that as we go through.
So I wouldn't want to have that in effect. Because
that would discourage him from coming in.
Yes. I want to make it as simple as possible that they come down here and they would be told at that time that,
okay.
And then the fire marshal would be part of that.
So, question. So we don't have anything in place right now, and you've got something that looks pretty straightforward here, and we could just simply say, well, because of its straightforwardness, we think we covered the bases really well. We just simply adopt that. But an ordinance is called an ordinance because it basically lives long term. And what I'm thinking is that normally if we're going to adopt a long term ordinance, that we would go to, for instance, WASAC and say, hey, tell us, give us examples of what other counties are doing that have already gone down this road, already solved this problem, already optimized it and fine-tuned it, and start with that advantage.
If I may, I looked up several different counties that are comparable to ours, both in population. I didn't look at King, for instance, but Thurston County is one that had an ordinance, and it's one of the only ones in the state that has an ordinance specific to this. Their code was written in about the mid-1970s and hasn't changed much, and according to conversations with our counterparts up there and public health's counterparts up there, it's no longer enforced. It's also about 25 pages.
Whoa.
And full of all kinds of stuff.
So they're not a real good model.
Right. And that's kind of...
So you already went to WASAC, and that's all you found?
That's pretty much all I found. There were a couple other things that weren't specific to this, but kind of had the same elements of it. But I didn't think it would really work for us as what we're trying to do.
Okay, in other words, you're confident. You feel good about what you have here.
I do.
And the research that you've been able to do has bolstered that confidence that you have that this is the right combination.
Yes.
Okay. And this is something that, well, you're right. Chris, you mentioned this is not Planning Commission stuff. This just goes directly to the commissioners.
If this is a health and safety and doesn't regulate zoning per se, then...
It does.
Okay.
We do have changes to the commercial code here, and one of the things we changed down on the bottom, 4230.010, is make these types of businesses review and approval.
Oh.
And the reason we do that is because then we can require this separate code section where they are required to show us verified copies of their state licenses. That's
okay.
Yeah.
So this would go to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
In terms of other businesses that have regulated it, Olympia, MRSC shows Olympia doing one in 97, and Kent did one in 93, but most of these are reasonably old, and some of them are as old as 84 and 82. Kent's is from 82.
The reason I did glance at cities for some of the language, but the reason I didn't focus too much on city policies is because they have the ability to issue a business license,
yeah,
and we don't.
Which is very helpful.
Right, that's to regulate this.
So you had to go the certificate of occupancy route.
Yeah, we thought about going through the public health route and issuing a license that way, but after conversations with Dr. Melnick, that just wasn't practical.
Okay,
it looks kind of like that because I think I'd even like to bring their permit to our permit center too. We'll find a way someday.
So are you guys thinking you need a work session or you want us to take it to Planning Commission and then to you?
I'd like to run it through Planning Commission and give me time to review it in between.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go ahead and schedule it.
So that process would take, 2 months or something like that to get all the way through?
Yeah.
2.5 months?
Well, through the board completely, sure. Through just the Planning Commission. I also am the keeper of the Planning Commission schedule, so I'm kind of running through my head right now. I believe we can get it done in about 6 weeks through work session, their work session and their hearings.
Between now and then, Chris, we did a moratorium on adult entertainment. Should we do anything like that for this? Because between now and then, grandfathered new ones could, or new ones come in grandfathered ahead of it.
Well, our goal is not necessarily to preclude them from locating. It's more a matter of knowing where they are and making sure they're licensed. And so whether they're in existence now or come later, there's still going to be some. My sense is that Jeff's going to write this so they'll still be subject to the ordinance. So we could. I mean, we could certainly assure that. But if they're not, if the code doesn't regulate them now, then your moratorium would have to say that all those uses, all new massage parlors, and then you'd have to create some exceptions are prohibited. But it's going to scare a lot of legitimate businesses when they see the word moratorium and massage parlor prohibit and the word prohibited all in the same sentence. It may not be necessary to accomplish what you're trying to do.
Okay, because you've got to get the balance on this. You've got
to make sure agree.
That legitimate businesses welcome this, and
right.
It doesn't hurt them, it helps them.
Right, that was the sentiment. They haven't offered any official comment or written comment to businesses that I spoke with. But the managers I spoke with when I went out and dropped off the ordinance personally and talked to them about it was, we don't want these type of activities because it harms our image. And that's kind of the point we were trying to make.
Sounds good.
Well, it's almost like a good housekeeping seal when you have that blessing from the county.
That's kind of how I tried to sell it. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention is just because this stuff isn't in the land use code doesn't mean, a lot of the activities that we're trying to prohibit are already illegal. But it's not in the land use code, and that's why we're trying to do it here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks for covering the bases.
Sure. I'll get that.
And I'll get that.
Appreciate it.
Good.
Good
job.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work.
Okay, now we're legitimately on commissioner report.
And I remember he said he didn't have any.
He did.
Yeah.
No alibis either.
No do-overs, right?
I am. I'm in the cloud a little bit with the RS, not necessarily the RSN group, with Vanessa
Gaston
becoming part of the RSN to include drug and alcohol as a step, as an additional step to the direction of adding Obamacare as step three. And I think that's my understanding when I asked them in that one meeting work group that we had, I don't know if it's here or in the other room. And then when it came out, they said, well, yeah, that's what it is. It is part of the Obamacare at the state level. And what makes me think of that is what went on in Oregon with their, what appears to me to be the same thing, with their health care being at the state level with passed down money from the federal government, and it just imploded over there.
Well, their website, Cover Oregon, doesn't work.
And so but they're still taking applicants. So anyway, I guess I'm concerned as to, do we look like that? Is that what we're...
I have some feedback on that.
You got something for that?
I do.
All right.
He's on the board.
I'm glad I brought that up. I got all this down here.
The RSN board meeting is going to be May 1st, and Vanessa Gaston is going to be presenting the RHA, the Regional
Healthcare Alliance.
During that meeting. And the way they see that is that the integration of chemical dependency with mental health services is the next step that they believe that we're not going to have a choice. The state's going to mandate it. And then the next step after that is the full integration of physical health.
Well, see, that's what they told us before, and the option is what the state of Oregon is going to.
Yeah. So what the exploring of all of these different options and the collaborating that RHA, the purpose for that is to make sure that we have local representation, that we don't get trumped by the state dictating to us what we must do. Instead, this allows our community and the leaders within our community to have a voice in that and really take a hold of the steering wheel and say, this is the way we want to go.
That's what they said when they enacted step one of the RSM. Mm-hmm. That this was going to be a state mandate. And what it is, it's a federal mandate upon the state. And that's what we see over in Oregon right now.
Yeah.
That federal mandate upon the state, and in their case over there, their state drive fell apart. And my fear here is that we're going to be picking up the pieces for failed health care at the federal level, and how they're going to bounce it would be with the mandates and the pulling of money out from underneath it, leaving us to be holding the bag. And I'm really scared of that, because Washingtonians would be left with no health care at all.
Well, the Oregon issue has to do with their system for signing up and putting people into the healthcare system, and they're now moving to the national system for mm-hmm. doing that because it didn't work.
$250 million.
Right.
$250 million.
That's healthcare.
More than the bridge.
That's
healthcare only. So we're kind of mixing a few issues, because the RSN is mental health, chemical dependency, and then now the Regional Healthcare Alliance is talking about bringing in regional healthcare and merging all those issues. But they still would have to be involved in their individual systems.
Yeah.
And so, for instance, we have our own system for signing folks up for healthcare under the new national law in Washington, which, to my knowledge, hasn't been having the same
issues.
So we've gone one step farther than Cover Oregon. Cover Oregon was what we are threatened with the state taking over our health care. That would be what Cover Oregon is.
Well, a number of states decided to set up their own exchange, their health care exchanges. Washington and Oregon both decided to set up their own health care exchange. Mm-hmm. Washington did it right. Oregon did it wrong. Our healthcare exchange is working reasonably well. I've not heard one complaint about our healthcare exchange in Washington.
Well, that's because 80% of the people signing up are on Medicare.
Medicare,
or don't pay into it.
Right.
And therefore, it's unsustainable. When it becomes unsustainable, we're going to turn around and we're going to tax the residents of Washington out of their pocketbook.
Yeah.
Or we're going to fall back on the federal people and say, it's your plan, you take it. I just want to know where exactly we are. And what kind of a guarantee do we have that it's going to be funded?
None. I think right now the feds are covering 100% of the additional Medicare. I think in, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, they cut it off.
They cover 90%. They cover 90%.
That's a general practice of government bounces their budget mm-hmm. as it comes down to the local level.
But when the governor of the state of Washington or the legislature accepted and decided to accept that Medicare money, they committed us to a path, and we're on that path.
Well, it's a system that has to play itself out, and I'm not taking a position one way or the other, but I think the other side of that coin, yes, we have to pick up the cost for certain folks, but in the system currently, the insurance premiums are where they are because those folks are using the ERs, and we have to cover that cost. So that cost has to be covered somewhere,
because we are caring for everyone in our system. So it just has to play itself out.
When we started off with that, we were talking about getting partners, and the partners would include the insurance companies and the hospitals and so on, and us. And what it would do would be that, well, we would when someone was to go to the emergency room, somebody would be there checking them in and saying, you have an emergency or you don't have an emergency, go over to such and such clinic. The hospitals would be paying a good portion of that burden, because they're the ones that have to eat that money today. Well, they eat that money today, but then our insurance rates reflect that to pay it. Nothing's free. So the rest of us who have insurance, and our insurance rates went up here a few years back to cover AMR, because 50% of the people riding AMR didn't have insurance, so they increased our insurance rates to pay for the people who didn't have insurance.
Right.
And this is a trend that I'm afraid we're going to go into, because nothing has ever changed in government. I just want to have a good understanding of a guarantee that we're going to have. If we don't have that guarantee, what are we doing?
Well, I think it's important to have people who are more in the know than certainly someone like me explain how this is going to play out. I mean, it's a fair question.
Well,
how is it going to play out?
There can be no guarantee.
Well, there has to be a guarantee because everybody's paying it into the federal.
Well, what's the
federal Obamacare? So,
what's the guarantee today? We're paying for health care today. So, I mean, is it the same guarantee?
I think the commissioner's question is, we're going to end up paying 10% of the Medicare costs. I think it drops to 90% federal, 10% local. Okay. Well, what if the feds say it's not 90, it's 70-30? Or 50-50. We can't pick up that financial burden at the state level or at the local level. So I understand your concern. I just want to understand it better.
I got to feel better about this.
Yeah.
You see what the federal government has done to the retirement of the military? Those in the military active reserve, they're removing 1% of their COLA every year up to the age of 62.
They fixed that.
They fixed it. That's the kind of stuff that comes before us. The other thing that they did, they also reduced the retirement of our military people. And we just found out that they're jockeying the books so that they don't show how many people are not being taken care of, and 4 people have died in that one state. So I have no confidence in someone saying, yeah, we're going to give your money back to you to pay for this. They take our money and wheel it back to us is what's going on. We need to know before we jump off this building if we're going to have a parachute.
It's a fair question. Yeah.
So what do we do?
You take that back to your group.
Well, if the state's mandated...
You were taking notes, weren't you?
I think Dr. Melnick and Vanessa are being proactive because they want to be early adopters, because they want to chart our own course rather than having it charted for us.
That's a good way to put it.
I hear that's what the state is telling us.
And we have navigators, these folks that are signing people up. They must have a good understanding of the system. And I'm trying to find somebody other than you and me to try and explain.
Some states haven't opted into this program at all. They've opted out of Obamacare, and what they have is the normal health care that we had before.
Well, the rules still apply to individuals in those states. Those states may not have set up exchanges, mm-hmm. but the people in those states are still subject to the fine for not having insurance.
They haven't signed up. What are they going to do?
Well, the IRS is going to come knock on your door shortly.
Well,
so you either pay the fine or you buy insurance.
And the Oregon just got all their people in trouble because the federal law says you need to be able to sign up through the state exchange in order to qualify for the tax credit.
Hi.
And when they went from the state exchange to use the federal exchange, they just forfeited that. It says, oh, I guess we don't get the credit. All those people.
Yeah. So that's the fear. That's how easy they can. I hate to get halfway after jumping off the building and find out that my parachute's on fire.
Or that you forgot it. like
I might be slow at first, but it speeds up as they get closer to the ground.
I think Dr. Melnick and Vanessa both have those same concerns, okay. And I think we each do. So, yep, I'm tuned in, and we'll do what we can to learn. And really, it comes to navigating this.
How do we protect ourselves?
Well, we can attempt, and we will attempt.
Yeah.
But the state really is the authority over us.
Mr. Silliman, I bet, has the answer to that. And that's all I had on my part. So.
Okay.
Great. It's easy.
Good. All right. Well,
Axel?
I'm good.
Mary? No? Mark?
Okay, we have a work session request from the DEEB.
Really? Oh, it's their
annual report and work plan for 14-15.
Awesome.
And they're looking to have that.
That sounds good. Absolutely. Green
4th
light.
Of June. Is that okay?
Sounds good to me. Let me just check my schedule. Work session at 10 o'clock. We already got one work session.
That's it? Oh, you got a...
And then we have a...
I'm good.
I'm looking at an employment thing here.
Yeah, vacancy request. Okay, so we'll schedule that work session then.
Sounds good.
Okay, and then we have a crisis intervention request to fill a position. The former incumbent resigned. This is funded by Medicaid and state dollars, 60% Medicaid, 40% state.
I can spend that money pretty easy.
No general fund.
So it's just replacing a vacancy?
Yes. And RCW requires...
green light for me.
That we provide these kinds of services.
We don't have a choice.
Right.
Okay. That okay, Tom?
We can do it for free, or we can pay for ourselves. Which one you want?
Okay, so we're okay, going
yeah, green
now.
Light. Yeah.
Good. Okay, very good. Okay, let's...
So we're done with our business?
Pretty much.
I was going to see if Mr. Silliman was here to share with our board, which we just finished up already, or if you wanted to share news from
the freehold. Actually, I'm sorry, I was kind of late. I just wanted to see what a board time meeting kind of goes through since I saw it on the calendar today.
We did all the hard stuff already.
Board times are on our grid, on our county webpage, audio files.
I saw that.
Sorry, I know you were going to say that.
I'm glad you did.
Wind me up.
You can steal my thunder anytime.
Peter Sullivan.
I'd love to see. Helly, love to hear that thunder.
We took the Wilson citizens back here depending on the daily issue.
Great.
Okay.
So we're wrapped up?
Yeah.
I got to work on my question.
You got it.
I talked to different people along the way that come up with good